Sefer at once for the Haftorah. The first is, of course, on Yom Kippur Mincha, we read Sefer Yonah, that's the whole Sefer, and then the Navi Ovadia as well. Ovadia is one of the Nevi'ei Treyasar, and that's the Haftorah for Vayishlach. It's actually the entire the Sefer, but here in this case it's not such a Chiddush because it's only one Perek. Question is, who was this Ovadia? So Ovadia comes up where in Tanakh? Shane, what do you think? Where does Ovadia come up in Tanakh?
Nevi'im.
Yeah, and where in the Nevi'im? Okay, so in Treyasar we have Sefer Ovadia, but what do we know about Ovadia? Where is he? He's referred to in Sefer Melachim as the chief of staff to Ahav, which is very fascinating because Ahav is the most wicked of all of the kings. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says about him that, based on the Mishnah, that Ein lo chelek l'olam haba, you know, quite an evil man, and his wife was even more evil than him, Izebel. And yet, about Ovadia, there's a comment that doesn't say about anybody else in Tanakh. It says, Ovadia was Yore Hashem Me'od. And Nemar be'Ovadia, Mashalo Nemar be'Avram Avinu, even more than it says about Avram. At the Akedah, it says, Ata Yadati ki Yirei Elokim Ata, that you are a man of Yiras Hashem. But Ovadia is Yorei Hashem Me'od. So according to Chazal, that's the Ovadia of the Navi that we're going to read today, the Ovadia of Treyasar. So let's now take a look here at the Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis to give you a little bit of a hakdama to say for Ovadia before we actually read the Haftorah. This is the following. Vayikra Achav el Ovadia asher al habayis. Ve'ovadiu Ovadia haya yarei Hashem ma'od. Ma'ika amar kra, amar Rabbi Yitzchak amar lei, b'Yakov ksiv. About Yaakov Avinu, we just read it in Parshas Vayetze nichashti vayivarcheni Hashem biglalecha. Who said that to Yaakov? That God has blessed me on your account?
Who said that to
Yaakov?
To Yaakov.
Come on in. Is it closed? It's locked? Okay. Thanks. Nichashti, who was Yaakov living with? Yaakov was in?
He was living with Lavan?
Yeah, he was in Beis Lavan, exactly.
Right. Oh, so Lavan told him?
Yeah, Lavan said, you know, we were blessed by your presence. V'Yosef k'siv, v'yivarech Hashem es Beis HaMitzri biglal Yosef. Okay, and Yosef was responsible for blessing that was given to the house of Potiphar. Beis Adahu Gavra lo hava mifrach. But Achav and Izebel were in the middle of a depression, an economic depression. So he was saying to Ovadia, what's wrong with you? Shemelo yirei Elokim ata. Why am I not being blessed? If you're such a religious man, you know, why aren't you helping me out financially? Okay, so let's just send this down there. We're just looking at the first source, a little hakdama to who Ovadia was. Okay. So, Yatz the Baskal V'Amra, Ovadia Yarei Hashem Me'od. Ovadia was more than just Yarei Hashem, but he's Yarei Hashem Me'od. Aval Beis Hashem Achav Eino Mizuman Lebracha. But Achav, your house is so evil, much worse than the house of Lavan, worse even than the house of Potiphar, if you can imagine such a thing, therefore not deserving of Bracha. Amar Rabbi Abba, Gadol Shenemar Be'Ovadia Yosem Yimah Shenemar Be'Avram. That Ovadia was considered even more God-fearing than Avram even was, which is really quite astonishing. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mipnei ma zach Ovadiyahu l'nevius? Why was Ovadia fitting to be a Navi? Mipnei shehech bimei ha-neviim bima'ara. Because Ovadia hid, he saved the lives of 100 Nevi'im. I mentioned before that Ahav and Izebel were truly evil people, and Izebel went on a genocide campaign against the few religious people left in the northern kingdom. Okay, so Ovadia, I wouldn't call him a righteous, I mentioned this in the past, I wouldn't call him a righteous Gentile, I would call him a righteous Jew. He actually saved, right, you know, 100 people. He was the, you know, Raoul Wallenberg, so to speak, of the base, Achav and Izebel, fourth floor. You can either take the steps or the elevator, either one. Okay, so the steps are just through that door. Okay, so Mipnei Shehich bin Nemeya Neviim b'Ma'ara. Shneamar v'Hachris Izebel as Neviya Hashem v'Ikachu v'Adyo Omei Neviim v'Yach Biyim Chamishim Ish b'Ma'ara. So why did he split them into two different groups of 50? Maishna chamishim ish. Amr blazer miyakov lamad. Shenemar v'hayaha machaneni shar lifleta. A beautiful question, a connection to this morning, to this week's parsha. What does it say about Yaakov? That his Yaakov split the camps. It's actually the deepest connection to this week's parsha. And so Uvadya learned to split the camps into two. Rabbi Yavahu Amar. Rabbi Yavahu gives a more prosaic explanation. Lefi she'ein me'ara machazek es yoser mechamishim. Because each could only hold 50. Chazon Uvadyahu. Little further in the Gemara, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim le'Edom. So the whole nevuah that we're going to read about, it's only one parak, one sefer. It's all about Edom. So Maishna Ovadya le'Edom. Why was Ovadya appointed the navi to Edom? Amr Yitzchak, Amr Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yavo Ovadya dar ben shnei rishayim velo lamad mimaseihem, vayinabe al esav harasha shadar ben shnei tzadikim velo lamad mimaseihem. Very interesting. So Rabbi Yitzchak says it's only appropriate. Ovadya lived amongst the most wicked of people, and yet he was true to himself. He was able to be his own man. And what a rebuke that is to Esav, who had every opportunity. He didn't have to be his own man. He could ride on the coattails of the people around him, and yet he failed to do so. So it's the ultimate rebuke. Amar Ephraim mikasha talmido shel Rabbi Meir mishum Rabbi Meir, a different approach. Ovadya ger edomi haya v'hainu da'amriyenshi minei uvei abba nezel bein naraga. Different reason. The reason is because Ovadya was actually from Edom, which is the direct descendant of Esav. How you doing, Sally? And as a result, it would be best if, you know, he's the one that issued the rebuke. Minei uvei, somebody from within. And then the metaphor, which is always given in the Gemara, abba is a forest, okay, that the one from the forest, okay, abba nezel bei narga, that the wooden handle should go and chop down the forest from whence it came. In other words, you take a tree in the forest and you make a wooden handle from it, and then you put it on an axe to chop down the whole forest. Okay? So anyway, the thinking was that Ovadya ger edomi haya. Very fascinating kind of an idea. Okay. Good. So that represents a kind of hakdama to what Sefer Ovadya is all about, and it really is a beautiful hakdama to this week's Haftarah. So if everybody could take a look, this is the Haftorah for Parshas Vayishlach. You already know about one of the connections, because Ovadya took a page out of Yaakov Avinu's playbook in terms of hiding the Nevi'ei Hashem, splitting them into two camps, according to one opinion anyway. That's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. But now we're going to try to discern deeper layers of connection. This is page 303. It is the entirety of Sefer Ovadya. It's always exciting. We're going to cover one of the Sifrei Tanakh. There are 24 different Sfarim in Tanakh, but if you count Trei Asar as 12 different ones, so then that'd be 35. So this is it, tonight, right here, before 8 p.m., you knock off one of the Sfarim of Tanakh. It's a good feeling. Chazon Ovadya. Ko amar Adonai Elohim le'edom, Shemua shamanu me'it Adonai, v'tzir bagoyim shulach, kumu v'nakuma aleha la'mil chama. This message comes from God that there will be a war on Edom. And again, in this week's parsha, you have no fewer than 20 times, literally. I mean, it's an exaggeration, but 10 times. Esav hu Edom. Esav avi Edom. Hu Esav avi Edom. Repeatedly, over and over and over again, the association between Esav and Edom. Okay, there will be a war on Edom, a war on the descendants of Esav. Hinei Katon nitaticha bagayim. You are the small one amongst the nations. Bazui ata me'od. You are a source of bizayon and shame. Now, anytime you have the root of bazui, biza, with Esav, what should we immediately think about? The first critical pasuk that we really have about Esav in terms of his moral legacy, what does it say about Esav? This is going back to Parshas Toldos, 2 weeks before our parsha. That's actually Yishmael, close Moshe.
Right. Birthright.
Nicely done. Your so just what does the pasuk say? Vayivez Esav es habichora. Now connect that to this pasuk. How is it a double connection? Bazuay atam me'od. You were mevaza the bechora. Therefore, you are bazuay. But not only that. What does it describe you as in this pasuk? The katan. Because you despise the Bechorah, that's why you're really the Katan. It's not because Yaakov tricked you. That wouldn't have mattered. It was the fact that you, of your own accord, Vayivez as HaBechorah, you showed no respect no true respect for tradition. Take a look at the source page. This is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud. V'atani Rav Yosef, kato nitaticha bagayim. You know what makes Edom small? What made Esav small? An interesting two Gemaras. Ein moshivin melech ben melech. If you look at the list of kings at the end of the parasha, lifnei melech melech li b'nei Yisrael, it goes through the kings that descended from Esav. They didn't have one king who was able to put a son on the throne. So what is that message? What are Chazal trying to point out here? It's not just, oh, they always had managed to have different kings, but what does that show? In their society, they didn't value family and continuity. It's a very sharp observation. They had no heritage. They had no sense of continuity of tradition. Another one. They didn't develop their own, anthropologically speaking, they didn't develop their own language and they didn't develop their own literature. Culture. They lacked the basic features of an autonomous culture. But what's that a commentary on? Again, what does that take us back to in Parshas Toldos about the contrast between Yaakov and Esav? It's not objectively a negative thing, but then when you put this together,
he's a man of the field.
Excellent. Culture is always a sign of investment, development. In its own way, it reflects heritage. But we talk about Yaakov being the Yoshev Ohalim Nechi, right? That's the place where culture is developed. The Ishu Deatzai Ish Sadeh is fine. There's nothing wrong with being an outdoors person. But when it comes to the exclusion of any appreciation of culture, of wisdom, of heritage, that's already Bazui Atam. Oh, that's a very... In other words, there's something deeply, and I think that we sense this instinctively, intuitively, there's something deeply Jewish about appreciating culture, language, literature. Loksav v'lo lashon is an insult. It's pejorative. Okay, that's important. Zidon, now back to the psukim. Zidon libcha hishiecha. You were misled by your own heart. Shochni b'chag v'sela merom shivto. You... who deigned, who was presumptuous to dwell on high, Omer Bilibo, you said in your own heart, Miyori Daniarat, who could possibly bring me down? Im Tagbia Kanesher, even if you lift yourself up to the skies. Why is the Nesher an important symbol here? In the context of Edom, what was the symbol of Rome? The eagle. Right? And if you'll put your nest amongst the stars, I can verily bring you down, so says God. Two more observations here. Number one, where is Esav's locale always described? Har Seir. The whole thrust of Ovadia's Nebuah is bringing down that which is on high. Number one. Number two, Zidon libcha hishiacha, omer b'libo shochve b'chag v'selam erom shifto. The idea of Esav having this internal dialogue, where does that come from? Where in the Chumash does it say that Esav, what did Esav, this is the whole backdrop of the Haftorah, what did Esav say to himself? Vayomer Esav el libo, Moshe, what is it? Vayomer Esav el libo, Yikrevu Yimei Abel Avi Aharga Es Yaakov Achi. Esav said in his own heart, I will kill my brother. So throughout the Haftorah you'll find imagery of El Libo, Zidon Libcha, Hishiacha, the things that you thought were private, the things you thought nobody knew about you, those things will be brought to your trial. You will be judged in light of those things. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so Zidon Libcha Ishiacha, bringing it. Im Ganavim Ba'ulacha, even if you had been plundered by Thebes, Im Shodadai Laila, right, people who came in the night, Eich Nidmesa, why would you have thought, Halo Yignevu Dayam, that they're going to take, right, enough from you. However, im botrim ba'ulach, if people came to steal your grapes, your grape harvest, halo yashiru olilos, even they would leave the bad grapes behind. However, in your case, Esav, when the war on Esav finally happens, nothing will be left. Literally nothing. It will be a total eradication. Eich nechbesu Esav nivu matzpunav. How much will Esav be searched out? All the things that he thought were hidden and concealed will be revealed. Again, and to me, that anyway is a reference to Vayomer Esav el libo. The hidden things about Esav will be revealed. Ad ha-gevul shalchucha, how will the war go? Those who you think are your allies, they'll accompany you to the border. Kol anshe brisacha, the people with whom you have deals. Hishi'ucha, they will have deceived you. Yachlu lecha anshe shalomecha, the people with whom you have treaties will deceive you. Lachmecha yasimu mazor tachtecha ein tivuna bo, they will bring you mazor is a maka, a wound. You will have not discerned it. Halo bayom ahunu madunai ve'avanti chachami me'edem utvuna mehar Esav. It was as if there have been no wise men in Esav, because you'll be deceived by the people with whom you make alliances. V'chatu giborecha teman, all of your soldiers will be cut down. L'man yikares ish mehar Esav mikatel, not a single soldier will remain standing. Everybody will be killed on the mountain of Esav. So again, what the Navi is predicting is that when Esav loses, ultimately in war, it would be twofold. Number one, will be a total defeat. There won't be any remnant. Number two, will be based on deception. Esav will be deceived by the people that Esav entrusted, the people that Esav made deals with. Esav's deals, alliances, agreements will go bad. Now, of course, at this point, we begin to see the connection with the Parsha. Again, what was said in the Parsha? The climax of the Yaakov and Esav story happens, right? Started in Toldos, right? Vayetze was only about Yaakov. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim b'fanav el Esav achiv arza seir sedei edom, right? And then what happens? Esav runs and he hugs Yaakov and he kisses him. And then he says, this is the most important pasuk in the Parsha to understand the Haftarah, nis'av in eleicha, let us walk together, ve'elcha l'negdecha, and we'll walk literally opposite each other. So Esav offers Yaakov a deal. And Yaakov does what? What's Yaakov's basic response?
I'll follow you. Take me a long time to get
there. Exactly. V'anochi es nahala li'iti. I'm going to go at my own pace. In other words, no thanks. So by saying that Esav's deals go bad, you already see that the Haftorah is commenting a little bit on this, right? That it's not a good idea to be involved with Esav's idea of a covenant. Now, not only that, what we're going to read, Esav appears one later time in the Torah. Anybody remember where?
When Yaakov is being buried, right?
When Yitzchak is being
buried. Oh,
right, Yitzchak is being buried.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Excellent. So that's the end. But what about Edom? There's one time. Excellent, Nachi, that when the Jews need to get into the land of Israel in the 40th year. Exactly. So, Vayimain Edom, Netonis Yisrael, Avor Bigvilo, Vayit Yisrael Melav. Now, we're going to read that story in just a moment, but that's an important backdrop to this Haftorah. Okay. Mechamas Achicha Yaakov, because of the way that you treated your brother Yaakov, Techaschavusha, you will be covered in shame. Vinichras liolam, cut off forever. What happened? Biyom amodcha mineged, you stood off to the side. Biyom shavos zarim chelo, when Israel was being plundered, when the Beis Hamikdash was being destroyed, Edom was there, could have helped them, didn't lift a finger. They stood off to the side. Amodcha mineged. Nachrim ba'u sha'arav, and so foreigners came to the gates of Jerusalem. Al Yerushalayim yadu goral, gam ata kechad mehem. God says, I consider it as if you had destroyed the Beis Hamikdash yourself, even the first Beis Hamikdash when Babel came. You didn't lift a finger. Now, what's the?
It's a nevuah.
This is a nevuah.
Correct.
This is the nevuah of Ovadia during Bais Rishon about why Edom will be destroyed in the future. And interesting is, again, and Edom, of course, the ones who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. There's a machlokas amongst the Mefarshim between Ibn Ezra and the Radak, whether this is talking about Bais Rishon or Bais Sheni. But either way, there was at some point where Edom stood off to the side and didn't help. Again, b'yom amodcha mineged. You didn't help out. Now, what's really interesting here is twofold. We started the Haftorah by noting that what was Ovadia's greatness? When he could have been a bystander, what did he do? Ovadia is the ultimate person to give this rebuke. He didn't allow himself to stand by. He saved 100 people. And in Esav being criticized, because in Judaism there is no such thing as a bystander. Lo samod al dam reyecha. B'yom amodcha mineged. Esav is the right apotheosis of somebody who totally failed to show loyalty. But not only that, but what was Esav's offer to Yaakov in the parsha? Let's just go back to the pasuk. Nisav in Eilecha, we will travel together. Ve elcha linegdecha, I will always be there, mineged, watching you, helping. B'yom amodcha mineged. It's the ultimate rebuke to Esav. You said nisav neilecha ve'elcha lenegdecha. Did you live up to that? No. B'yom amodcha mineged. That's why I'll always consider it as if you had destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, even by a Rishon. Al teira b'yom achicha b'yom machro v'al tismach v'nevyudya b'yom avdam agtal gopicha b'yom tzara. Don't celebrate now that Yaakov has been destroyed. Al tavo v'sharami b'yom edam al teira gam atah b'raso b'yom edo. Don't rejoice as Judah is being destroyed. Al tishlachena b'chelo b'yom edo. Don't think that you're going to plunder him. Al ta'amod al haperek l'achris es pleitav. Don't stand there. Again, their suggestion that this is actually what happened, that as the Jews are fleeing from those who would come to destroy them, that Esav stood, right, and actually killed the refugees. Ve'al taskir siridav b'yom tzara. Right, don't think that you're going to be able to hand over, ultimately, in the final battle, that you're going to do what you did at that original battle, which is to kill the refugees as they fled from the Babylonians, and to hand back the Jews to be enslaved in Babel. Ki karov yom Adonai al kol hagoyim, kasher asisa yaselach, kimulcha yashuv biroshecha. Everything you did in that battle will be brought back on your head. Ki kasher shesisa malhar kochi, as you desecrated my holy mountain. Again, this is probably a reference to Bais Sheni when Edom came to destroy themselves. Yishtu chol hagoyim tamid, so all the nations will destroy you. Vishasu vilau vihayu kilohayu. They will so thoroughly destroy you, it will be as if you never existed. Uvahar tzion tia pleita. But for Zion, for the Jews, there will be a remnant. Vihaya kodesh, and they'll be sacred unto me, says God. Viyarshu beis Yaakov es morashehem. And ultimately, Jacob, Yaakov, will inherit Esav. Now, what I want to do now is, if you have it on your sheet, I want to show you how the one time towards the end of the Torah that we have the reappearance of Esav, it's within this motif. It's a reliving of the story of Yaakov and Esav, and a precursor to the Haftorah. Okay, so Sally, you want to take it first? This is the third source. It's from Parshas Chukas. The setting is the 40th year of the Jewish sojourn in the desert. What's that a play on? Vayishlach Moshe Malachim, the beginning of this week's parsha. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim El Esav. Okay. Koamar, not just Yisrael, but we're reaching out in brotherhood. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav El Esav, Achiv. Excellent, Nechi. Okay. Aratz Seir Sedei Edom. This is just the whole story happening again. You know everything that has happened to us. Okay, so we went down to Egypt and we had a terrible time there. Okay. So God saved us through a malach, which is obviously a critical word here, right? And now we are at your border. So what deal are we offering, Edom? We say you don't have to do anything for us. All you have to do is stand there. In other words, just stand there. We don't need your help. All we're doing is we're just asking for rights to pass on through. Right? We're not asking for anything more. Take you out of your way. Now, what is that a reference to, of course? Edom says to Yaakov, right, I am going to come with my sword. What did Yitzchak say to Esav? Al charbecha techiyah. So, vayomer elav Edom, lo tavor bi, right, you're not going to be allowed to cross through here, and I'm going to go to war with you. We're going to walk only on the highway. We won't go into any private property. Right. So we say to them, look, and if you're concerned, what we can do is we can make it profitable for the local economy, because what we'll do is at first the offer was that we won't drink your water at all. But if you want money for this, what we can do is we can buy local goods, your water, and we'll pay you for it. So they mobilize the military. Excellent. So Edom refuses. So again, it's a story where all Edom was being asked to do was to stand on the sidelines. And that they weren't even willing to do. So the irony is, of course, in light of the Haftorah, right, that Edom, right, they could really be, right, they could say, well, look, you know, we didn't lift a finger. You know, don't blame us, you know, that the Jews got destroyed. We were just off here on the side. But what's... Yeah, saying, wait a minute, that wasn't okay with you a second ago. You knew how to mobilize your army when you wanted to. Standing on the sidelines wasn't so attractive then. So, when you put this together with the Haftorah, and the vision of Korban Bayis Rishon, we're saying to Edom, you know, not only, I mean, they killed the refugees also, but even if you look past that, when Babel came to destroy us, all of a sudden, where were you? Where was your mobilization? You have a cherev, don't you? So, when you put together our parsha, Parsha Chukas, the last time that Edom appears in the Torah, and then the Haftorah, it's this whole historical trajectory of the way that Esav has conducted himself. Now, here comes the most famous line from the Haftorah. V'haya, at that point in time, in the future, the ultimate battle between Yaakov and Esav, when Esav will be fully destroyed, no survivors, V'haya beis Yaakov esh. So the house of Yaakov will be like fire, u'beis Yosef lahava, and the flame, the hottest part of the flame, will be the house of Yosef, u'beis Esav lakash, and Esav will be like straw, v'dalku bahem, and will catch them, va'achalum, and there will be total consumption. V'lo yihyeh sarid lebeis Esav ki Hashem diber. As sure as God speaks, there will not be a remnant to Esav. So what's this imagery of fire? There will be fire, and that fire will finally consume Esav. The image of fire. And Esav is the fuel, the kash, the straw. So of course you can talk about the Beis HaMikdash going up in flames. The second time it was Edom that did it. Even the first time they didn't do anything. But to me there's actually deeper layers of fire in the story. Where do we see? Excellent. The first time that, very good, Nachman, that the first time that Yaakov and Esav have an interaction in Chumash, at least a spoken interaction, there's, I mean, you just have to put yourself in the scene, but there's an actual fire, right? This is before electric stovetops. Mm-hmm. Yaakov is cooking on this fire. And that's where they have this interaction. That goes back to Vayivez Esav es HaBechorah Bazoi Atam Me'od. There's a fire. And finally, right, what we're told is that La Silavo, you know, Beis Yaakov Eish, Beis Yosef Lahava, Beis Esav Lakash. That fire will ultimately consume Esav. V'yarshu ha-negev es har-esav, v'ashvela es-plishtim, v'yarshu es-sedei Ephraim, v'sedei Shomron, u'vinyamin es-ha-gilad. So this will be part of a broader project of Jewish restoration of sovereignty over the land of Israel. V'galus hechel hazeh, and the exiled Jews, l'ibnei Yisrael, asher k'nanim atzarfas, that are actually exiled to the lands of France, and k'nanim is here, according to the Radak, a reference to Germanic lands. In other words, the Ashkenazi Jews, v'galus Yishalayim asher b'Sfarad, and the Sephardic Jews as well, the ones that were exiled to Spain, yarshu es arei ha-negev. They will be resettled in the south of Israel. And at that point in time, v'alu moshiim, those who are, moshiim means what? What's a moshia? Right, those who will, the same, like loshia, Yeshua, right. Al Hakaburos Val Yeshuos, the Alumoshim Behar Zion on Mount Zion, Lishpot es Har Esav, will stand in judgment of Mount Esav, because again, Har Seir, Esav was always depicted on the mountain. And at that point in time, Behaisav Hashem Hamlucha, God's kingdom will be firmly established. So we have to remind ourselves here, where else in Torah do we have this idea that Hashem's melucha won't be complete until there's a particular enemy that's eradicated? Excellent, Moshe. Kiyad al keska milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. But what's the connection between Esav and Amalek?
Esav comes from Amalek.
Yeah, what's
Amalek comes from Esav.
Amalek. Right, Amalek is actually the offspring of Esav's oldest son, Eliphaz. Eliphaz had a concubine, Timnah, Haisab Pilagesh la Eliphaz ben Esav, and actually gave birth to Amalek. So, to a great extent, you find the same paradigm here, that the defeat of Esav, just like we said about Amalek, right, kiyad al keis ka melchama l'Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. Right, the same idea Ovadia is applying at that point of Vayisal Hashem Hamlucha, and that's this. By the way, got integrated into the daily liturgy in the Az Yashir section, right? Which is the point that the ultimate victory will be ve'alu Moshe Bar Tzion lishpot es har Esav ve'Vayisal Hashem Hamlucha. At that point in time, God's kingdom will be firmly established. We mention every morning, as we're saying, Psuk Dei Zimra, the Shevach of every single day, that the truth of the matter is that Hashem's Malchus isn't even fully complete now. It would only be fully complete at the ultimate defeat of generally Amalek, but also Amalek's ancestor, which is Esav. That's really the idea. So to summarize, the critical ideas that come from this Haftorah is that, you know, there's two ways of looking at the parsha. You could say, oh, you know, well, Yaakov really missed an opportunity. Nisa v'neilecha ve'elcha l'negdecha, you know, this partnership was being offered. So the Navi Ovadia comes back and says two things about it. Number one, it wasn't as if Esav's partnerships were meant to last. And number two, Esav's own adherence to this offer, you know, when Yisrael reached out later in the Torah, Ko amar achicha Yisrael, ataya dates kolatla asher mitzasnu, all they could do is lo savorbi pen bachara veitzeli krasacha. They weren't even willing to stand by and let the Jews go, which is ironic because later on, you know, when they could have mobilized to help the Jews, all of a sudden they were perfectly happy to stand on the sideline. So it seems like the real idea here is it's not so much whether they stand on the sideline or mobilize, it's that they'll do whatever it is not to help Achicha Yaakov. So may Hamas Achicha Yaakov techas chabusha, that from the way that you treated your brother Yaakov historically, starting with, you know, this the 40th year in the desert, continuing on through Bayis Rishon, and then certainly Bayis Sheni, when they came to destroy Har Tzion, they literally came to destroy it. They will be held to account for all of these things. So, to me, what the Haftorah is really coming to say is sort of exonerating Yaakov in the Parsha, saying that, you know what, maybe it wasn't such a bad idea that Yaakov had of not accepting this idea of Nisav and Eilecha ve'elchal and Agdacha. Esav said one thing, which is, okay, we'll always be there to support each other, but Biyom Amudcha mi Neged, your way of standing off to the side shows that this wasn't really a sincere offer. Eich nach besu Esav niv'u matzpunav. Esav, right, that which was his true intention historically came out. Vayomer Esav el libo yikruvu yimei evel avi v'aharga es Yaakov achi. You know, it's interesting. Anybody remember in the Torah, I mentioned before that when Esav came to run out and greet Yaakov, it says vayaretz Esav likrato vayichabkeu, right? Vayinashku vayivku. So the view of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is that it was sincere. But there's another view. Yeah, that it actually wasn't sincere. It wasn't sincere because the way it's written in the Torah is strange. It's not written normally. What's written?
It says the Hebrew word, right?
It's actually in the Torah, it's written there as dots.
Right.
Above it, which is always a way of saying it's more. There's more here than meets the eye. So it's suggestive, actually, of something nefarious, and that's also represented in Tanakh. So it's important to be aware that it's easy to look at the parasha and say, "Oh, Yaakov wasn't interested in making a deal," but you have to take a little bit of a broader view. That's the point of Ovadia during the Haftorah. Take a bit of a broader view and say, "Well." What was Edom's track record? What was their track record later in the Torah when Moshe reached out? What was their track record during Bayis Rishon when they could have helped the Jewish people? What was their track record during Bayis Sheni when they were the ones who came to destroy the Jewish people? And by the way, that should be, and with this we'll conclude, that's an important addendum to the Hanukkah story. Let's not forget, the Hanukkah story is a very ambivalent story. The Chashmonaim, who were able to save the Jewish people from anybody know who was the war in from the Chashmonaim? Who was it against?
Greeks.
Right. So what basically happened was is that it's 2013. So 2,300 years ago, after Alexander the Great died, Alexander the Great conquered a great deal of the. I see we have about 5 minutes, so we'll take this time just to do a little Hanukkah. It's important to understand the Edom connection. So everybody knows that the Greek Empire was followed by the Roman Empire, but this had great impact on the Jewish people. So after Alexander the Great died, Alexander the Great, who was well-disposed towards the Jews, so his generals, he had basically, as always happens, decided that they wanted to be powerful for themselves. So his kingdom, his empire, split into three different kingdoms. There was the Greek Macedonian part, that was A, then there were two different centers of power in the Middle East. The Egyptian one under the general Ptolemy, okay, so it's called the Ptolemy Kingdom, and then the Seleucid Kingdom, which was based in Damascus in Syria. So there was the empire split three ways. So originally Israel was under control of the Egyptian section, but then 2,213 years ago, in the year 200 BCE, the Syrians came to what's called the Seleucid Empire, and they conquered Israel. They kicked out the Egyptians. About 30 years later, there was a civil war between the Jews. The Torah Jews and the Jews who decided that they wouldn't want to be Torah observant anymore, they wanted to have Greek culture. We call them the Mityavnim. So generally speaking, Alexander the Great's policy had always been is you don't get involved in local culture. Okay, but the rulers of the Seleucid Empire in Syria, anybody know what they called themselves? It's like Paro in Egypt, they called themselves Antiochus. That was their chosen name. So the Antiochus came down. They said, okay, we want to take sides with the Jews in this civil war who want to be more like Greek culture, more like us. So they made all these rules, which was uncharacteristic of the Greek Empire. You can no longer learn Torah. You can no longer observe the mitzvos. No bris milah. No Jewish education. By the way, this is what we say all 8 days in the Al Hanisim. Amda Malchus Yavan. It's not actually Greece. It's the Malchus Yavan, the empire. Al Yisrael. How do we describe what they did? It's not like the Purim story where it says, Bikesh Larog Lahabit is called Yehudim. That's not their interest. They weren't interested in it. It's what the Al Nisim is talking about, the history. So then, this was like 170 BC to 167. So then this family from the city of Modi'in, family of Kohanim, led by Matisyahu at first, who was a Kohen Gadol, right? Matisyahu, Kohen Gadol, Chashmonai, the family name of the Chashmonaim, which is why near Modi'in today in Israel, they built a little town called Chashmonaim. Okay? And he had five sons, Chashmonai Uvanav, and then they were able to lead the Jewish people to a victory. The question is, then what went wrong? Why isn't there a Beis HaMikdash today? So three of the five sons were Yehuda, Yochanan, Yonatan, Elazar, and Shimon. Three of the five sons were killed in battle. The first military leader was Yehuda, then Elazar, and then Yochanan were all killed in battle. Yonatan, one of the two remaining sons, became the Kohen Gadol after his father. And then in about the year 140 BCE, so 25 years after the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash, Shimon became the political leader. Now here's where everything started going downhill. Shimon should never have taken political power. The Torah says, Lo Yasser Shevet Me Yehuda Mechokek Mi Ben Ragum. You need a representative of Yehuda on the throne. Direct descendant of David HaMelech. Shimon's sons already took Malchus. And the Ramban says, this is why God saw to it that not a single one of the Chashmonaim survived. The whole house was wiped out. This is explicit Gemara in Baba Basra Daf Gimel. And who was the one who wiped them out?
It is Jewish people.
Edom.
Herod. Herod, who was a stooge of the Romans. His father was Agrippas. Right? These were all converted, you know, people who had been converted and not converted. Some discussion about the Jewish status. They assume that they really weren't. But that was one of the big mistakes, is that Shimon HaMakabi, one of the five sons of Matisyahu, who started this track towards political power, by one, two, and three generations later, there had been a move away from observance, and, you know, the very fact that they wanted to maintain this dynasty was itself evidence of how corrupt, from a religious perspective, the house of the Chashmonaim had become, and that's why God saw to it, they were wiped out. Now, the instrument, the way that this happened was the Chashmonaim, the dynasty started in 140 BCE. Herod wiped out the family in 37 BCE. It was a 103-year dynasty. And the way that this happened is that the great-grandchildren of Shimon HaMakabi, there was basically a fight of succession between the brothers. So they appealed to the Romans and said, why don't you guys come in and sort it out? And the Romans came in, and boy, did they sort it out. Okay, and led to the destruction of the entire house of the Chashmonaim. And what does the Gemara say about Herod? It was the worst thing that could have possibly happened for the Jewish people. We know about Herod because of all the construction projects. People here who have been to Israel know that Herod redid the Beis HaMikdash. Anybody here been to the Herodium? The Herodium is in Judea. He was interested in all these building projects. He was a nutcase, but a prolific nutcase in terms of his building. So what did Herod do? What was his first move after killing off all the Chashmonaim? Who did he kill? He killed almost every single rabbi in Israel. Destroyed the rabbinic establishment in Israel. Killed every single one of them. This all came out of the house of the Chashmonaim. And that it was through the Chashmonaim, through the Hanukkah story, the corruption of the house of the Chashmonaim. So the Ramban talks about that Edom got their foothold in Israel, and that of course resulted, again, in 37 BCE is when Herod came in as a stooge of the Romans, and killed off the Chashmonaim, and it wasn't more than 100, it was 107 years later that Edom finally came in and destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. But Edom came in through the Chashmonaim. Because instead of doing what they ought to have done, the Chashmonaim should have restored the Beis HaMikdash, the victory over the Seleucid Greeks, right, the Syrian Greeks, in 165, they had an opportunity to restore the Malchus Beis David, failed to do so, took political power for themselves, dynasty of 100 years, wiped out, Herod came in, and the rest is history. That was the march towards Edom. So it wasn't a given at all that Edom would have gotten a foothold. The Chashmonaim invited Edom in to resolve their own dispute, which should have never happened. Shouldn't have been involved in politics to begin with. This is how Edom got in. Once Edom was in, of course, they wouldn't let go. They eventually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. It's a terrible thing. And that's how Edom got involved. And again, of course, that's the basis of this Haftorah, where you have the, you know, Edom plundering Jewish people. Yeah, Moshe, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's the welcome that was given